Very good, and welcome to the Fred Report technical market call for January 21st, 2016. Obviously, lot to talk about in stocks, so let's get to it. The first thing is what would be ideal today would be what's called an inside day, which is a lower high than yesterday and a higher low. We're certainly set to make a higher low. We may not do that on the daily in terms of the high, but you know, sort of just trading back and forth was what I was looking for signs of stabilization. So far, we have that. Yesterday, we had some good signs. We saw IWM and IYT actually trading better than the spiders, which starts to correct that problem that we've discussed, which is the huge underperformance of those, which has led to what I call a bear market structure. Now, we saw that the other day when the S&P, or when the spider hit 192 to 195, and here we are down at 187.05. That lasted for a day. The point is to correct the problem that we've seen, which took a year to develop, is the risk is that this takes 2 or 3 months of back and forth and choppy action. And again, we are speaking not as traders here, but rather as people who have a mandate not to be fully invested in another 2008-style situation, but rather to protect clients. So in terms of protection, you know, we would not become fully invested here. In terms of trading, but yeah, we would absolutely buy stuff here and try to trade it. The problem is, if it doesn't work, we have to be willing to stop out and sell that stuff as well. And since a lot of advisors aren't willing to do that, we would be a little bit circumspect here. Most of us are holding cash positions. You know, I know and believe that every time the market's down 500 points, you should buy something, even if you do not suddenly throw all your money in, but you should try to buy something. And there are some attractive things. But what we want to point out when you look at the chart book this morning is almost everything has got oversold stochastics that are all in buy mode in a lot of stuff. And in a bull market structure, that will work effectively and be a major low, and everything will be wonderful. But if you look at the way the stochastics look, for example, on USO, you can see how that goes wrong if the structure or the fundamentals are bearish. Now, the interesting thing about this market to me is we are still closing above the 184 area, which is our real line of support in the 180s. Next, of course, would be 175, and we can definitely see us hitting there on some kind of a retest. The other thing I would mention is with this kind of downside momentum, the chance of a rally and a retest is very high. You usually do not end something like this with a V bottom. So, you know, trade accordingly. We're very happy being defensive here and waiting until the coast clears and before we just go willy-nilly all in here. We tried that once. We lost 2 points. Very, very happy with that result, given that we did that 5-6 S&P points ago. Let's talk about the bond market for a minute. We've looked at BAB as a great way to try to take advantage of this. Nice yield. We still like that. We still think it can make it to 31 or so, and it is in a buy mode, although it's overbought. That seems to be one of the best areas of this bond market, and so we would be using that to hide as well as some cash. Not going to go into a lot of bonds here. I know people don't have that many questions on it, so let's get right to commodities. First of all, gold is trading reasonably well. It looks like it's still making a base and a higher level of base. And more importantly for us, gold, the metal, is outperforming the gold stocks, and silver, which is actually healthy, shows less speculation, and so that's a good sign for the gold market. We're not expecting that market to run away, but it has been a pretty good sign. Oil, we have a new contract. The March contract starts trading today. We're looking at various things, USO, the perpetual contracts. Those are starting to stabilize a little bit. It looks like USO could have an inside day. The only thing I would caution people on here is, you know, if it bottoms, that doesn't mean we need to have a substantial rally. It just means we need to stop going down. We can make a base. We can still see ancillary problems with real estate, job loss, et cetera, in the oil patch. One of the interesting things that I would mention here, just anecdotally, as longer-term subscribers know, we have a petroleum engineer as a client, and he's done a lot of work, and according to his sort of back-of-the-envelope calculations, the imbalance between supply and demand is largely due to the Arab pumping. So if they stop doing that, you could see oil shoot right away. Our feeling is we're not buying oil. We could buy some of the quality stocks like Exxon and Chevron with a time horizon that you need to, that is probably a couple of years. We still would not buy any of the speculative ones at this time. There's going to be plenty of time to buy those. And, yes, we've talked to some people. Our favorite service stock is still Halliburton. Number two is Schlumberger. And we would not. We are underweight energy again and will be until we see a little bit more on that. Jeff, I'm going to move right to questions here. From you and then from everyone else, so we don't have as long a call. I imagine there are quite a few. So, Jeff, if you would have at it, please.
Hey, Fred. So, my first question for you. Yesterday, is it a capitulation day or not a capitulation day? Seems like there's a lot of debate about that.
To me, it is not a capitulation day because most capitulation days close on the lows. I've got the latest sentiment data from Investors Intelligence and from Consensus that I use. Honestly, I didn't have time last night because of the chart book to put that data in, but I will say that Investors Intelligence percent bears as of this week is nowhere near even where we were in 2011 at the bottom of that market. So to me, sentiment is lousy anecdotally. But the actual numbers are suggesting it's not as horrible as it is at real, even bull market bottoms. Let's give an example of that. We had going into last week the first week of bears being greater than bulls. And that's a positive sign. But realize even in September of 2015, we had 6 weeks of bears being greater than bulls before those numbers turned around. So, we're on the right path, Jeff. And capitulation in a bull market is different than capitulation in a bear market. I believe, again, because of the structure, that the jury is out as to whether this is still a bull market or not. I've got concerns about that. So I think the main thing is to be calm and, buy some stocks that you like the looks of, but realize that we could have a retest or even go lower.
Okay. So would you be a buyer right now of treasuries? Because the fact is, if we do get a decent rally, then probably yields start to climb back up a bit. Or would you wait for like the next rebound and then use that as your rebound in stocks and then use that as an entry point in treasuries? Or do you just think that the treasury trade thing is just not a good deal?
I still think that treasury trade has got a lot of money in it that's waiting to come out and go into stocks when it wants to. I'm looking at some of the other things like BAB and that have got much higher yields, figuring, again, Jeff, let's say the Fed raises rates at the January meeting. Okay, I think that is highly doubtful. But let's say
they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that. But let's say they do. Let's say that the Market Watch guy who has forecast Fed interest rate rises in the economy correctly 4 years in a row and is saying we're going to have 5 or 6 rises this year. As of yesterday, he was saying that is correct. And I don't think he is, but let's say he is. I still don't think you're going to see a huge runaway blast off in long-term rates with the market acting this way. But being in treasuries is kind of the tip of the spear. I'd rather have BAB at 29.86 yielding what it's yielding, because I don't think that's going to go much below 29. We're going to be able to average that and get out of it if we're completely wrong in recommending that. Whereas treasuries might be problematic if rates do go up. And again, you know, it certainly looks like they're not going to, but, you know, who knows? I don't.
Hey, so one thing that I like to look at is new lows. And I look at it a couple ways. I look at 1 month, 6 month, and 12 month new lows. And where we are, and also I like to look at high lows. I'll get to that in a second. But on the 1 month lows right now, going back to like 1994, we only have one other time period that compares to right now, and that was 1998. So I'm wondering what you think about that, and whether, I mean, it's the number of new lows on a 12-month basis is exceeding 07 peaks and 08 peaks in new lows. Now, that said, you know, it was not that good of a correlation, and I want to know what you if you believe that, too, that, like, we continue to go lower, but we didn't continue to make new highs on the new lows. So is that part of what you get when you're looking at new lows, is that you can make a new low on an index basis, but you don't necessarily make new lows? Is that something that we're going to have to live with kind of going forward?
That's something we're going to have to watch for. And, Jeff, as you say, that means that essentially the market is starting to heal itself. What causes those new lows numbers to really expand, in my view, is very heavy institutional selling. They're the ones that can really force those stocks down. And at the same time, a lot of that money funnels into larger caps. And you can see the result of that and how much the Russell is down versus the S&P. It's interesting to note that just as a matter of course, Jeff, if you sold every stock you owned in the NASDAQ in 1998, that was precisely the right thing to do. You had 2 years where the NASDAQ went, you know, basically from 3,500 to 5,000, but the NASDAQ ended up at 1,000, right? In other words, that amount of new lows might be the start of a bear market, not the end of one. You know, I use just the numbers in Barron's. That's all I use. I'm dying to see those. Those numbers got worse last week. I'm expecting those numbers to be climatic this week, you know, in the 1,200-1,300 range, and that does imply that we should have a relief rally here. The real question, again, is can we see on a relief rally the Russell and the transports lead? Basically, Jeff, what the sort of healing process I'm looking for is a rally from here with the Russell and the transports leading, another decline with the Russell and transports doing better on that decline than the S&P, and then another rally and another decline. In other words, just sort of bounce around, take some time, but have those Russell and transportation numbers do much better. You know, my friend's Brent oscillator, for example, has hit levels that we were hitting towards the bottom in 2008, 2009. Okay, on a daily basis, not yet on a weekly basis, but on a daily basis. We are very, very, very oversold. The question for our clients is, can they stand going all in here and having the spider then drop to 170 afterwards? That's the real question.
Right.
Right. And our client base is a little bit different than the hedge funds and stuff that you're used to dealing with. It's, you know, we have to be a little more cautious for most of our people because, again, they don't want to be fully invested for a decline. Talking to clients over the last week or so, most of our clients are relatively happy with holding 25 to 35% cash, which is where I think our average person is. And at the same time, Jeff, when we did that silly, as it turned out, buy opportunity and loaded up back in the 194 area on the spider, you know, and then said get out of it 2 days later. Some of our clients were, did not get out. They did not feel like they could, you know, I don't want, you know, trade their clients that aggressively. So they're in and the market's lower, although they're in mostly SPLV, which looks good, and BAB, which looks good. They've done okay, but it's still all of a sudden they're down to 3% cash in the nifty situation. That's a concern.
Where are you on your option stuff? Because one of the things that Jack and I look at in Erlanger Chart Room is the way that Phil looks at it. And, I mean, historically, we're at levels now. The last time we saw it was in 2010 and then 07 and then one period in 04 and then a 2000 period and a 98 period. So, and it took, by the way, until last Thursday before we got there, but we're hanging there pretty good right now. So I'm wondering if the way you look at options with your put call, if you are as at an extreme level, is what I'm saying I'm seeing on our stuff.
We weren't last week, Jeff. I'm going to tell everybody, I don't put those numbers in every day and stare at them. I put them in at the end of the week and see how they are. Again, part of the reason for that is most of our clients don't care about buying the exact low day. And one of the reasons I sort of wait for a week is because I don't want to get all excited. But I would imagine, yeah, we're getting up there. We were close to being up there before. So we might be up there on that now. Jeff, one thing I learned, remember Jose Velez at Smith Barney when we were part of them in the early 90s? He was the options guy that did the put-call ratio.
Yep.
One of the things Jose told me is, and he's right, is when you leave a trading range, put activity increases tremendously, and that's actually a bearish sign because the institutions are buying puts all of a sudden. Most of the time, the institutions aren't buying huge, huge, huge amounts of puts. So that, in some ways, might be a bad sign. The other thing I'll just illustrate for people, you know, sometimes you see something happening and it's for a different reason than you think. And I'll tell everyone a story here. One of the people that I helped trade for in the late 80s, early 90s when I was at Robinson Humphrey was Peter Lynch at Fidelity. And one of Jeff's and my friends is a guy named Nels Gary who used to do a lot of trading on that account. And one day, Nels called me and said, you know, Peter is buying more puts than I have ever seen him buy. He is literally loading the ship with puts, right? And so I began thinking, golly gee, Peter must be really bearish. This is really terrible. Oh, my heavens, oh, my heavens. What actually happened, Jeff, was Peter resigned. Said, I'm not going to run Fidelity's Magellan anymore. And the reason he was buying the puts was because he knew he was going to resign and he wanted to be protected if everyone sold the fund after he resigned. He wasn't bearish at all. He was just resigning, right?
Right.
So sometimes you see stuff and it's for a different reason than you think.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So last Friday, the Russell really outperformed, and then yesterday it really outperformed as well. So two of the last 3 days, we've seen really good outperformance on the Russell, and today it's basically tantamount to the S&P with where we are right now in the day. Is that constructive, that you want to see more of that?
Exactly. That is super constructive. That is very optimistic. That's one of the best things that we could possibly see here. That's what I want to see.
On the monthly chart, IWM yesterday, it almost hit 95. It hit like the low is 95.06 on IWM, which takes us back into the middle of 2013. That's how much we've given up of the gains on an intraday basis. And now with where we are right now, now we're kind of more at the end of 2013. We're coming into like the a little later in the year with being back at 100. Is 95 a big number for you, or is it not a big number on IWM?
95 to 90 is the support that IWM should hold. That's what I'm really hoping to see. Jeff, the other thing I'm hoping to see that would be absolutely you know, perfect and wonderful. If everyone looks at the monthly stochastics on IWM and compares them to SPY, what you'll see is we're down in the 30s now on IWM. And remember that a couple things can make the stochastics go down. One of them is downward motion in the market. The other is time passing. And if some time passes and that gets close to 20 and turns up, that may very well signal the end of this bear market slash correction that we're in. That's really what I'm looking at. If you look at IYT, that is down at 23. If that can turn up, that might signal the end of this. We're lower than we got in 2011, even when that market fell apart. You know, it looks a lot more like 2009, where we went below and then above 20.
So, Fred, let me ask you that question. Can I finesse it a little
bit?
Do the percent D and the percent K on the stochastics, do those have to both break below 20, or is it just the fact that the percent K is like under 20 right now, like on IYT as an example? I mean, what's your thinking on that?
You know, I would like to see them both break the percent, but just one is enough.
Like in 2011, at that low, we got we did not get the. Here, I'm just looking at this real quickly again. The percent K did, but the percent D did not, and that was like a pretty good bottom. In 2008, it went into 2009 before we got them both below, and then we had the cross, and then we kind of moved higher. But it's, I mean, historically, it's pretty rare to see both of those get down to those levels. Do we need to come back above a certain level before we're, like, okay with it? I mean, do we need to get it back above, like, 30, where you traditionally are like, okay, now you got the setup for the buy? Do we need to see that before we start to nibble? Or because we're down at this such a low level now, where we've only seen it basically on IYT, I'm looking at IYT right now, four other times, historically?
Yeah, I would say you would start to nibble when it turns up.
Okay.
But realize you're not fully in until the five-month moving average on the spider crosses back above the 20.
Okay.
So
the monthly on spider now is at 18.25 on the percent K, and so we're pretty close on that one too. And we haven't gone below 20 since 2008. Even 2011 didn't get there. So, do you consider, like, right now where we are for this to be worse than 2011? What we're living through right now.
Yes, absolutely. We tried to write about that in the weekly. The structure in 2011 was a bull market structure in that the transports and the Russell and the small cap stocks had made new all-time highs before the 2011 correction started. Now they're leading the way down. The broad market is leading the way down. The economically sensitive stuff is leading the way down. So it's a bear market structure. So
okay.
The risk is, you know, take a look for those people who want to see how the stochastic can do badly and indicate when those moving averages go negative. Take a look at the weekly chart of USO back in August of 2014 when those moving averages went negative and USO was at 36 and the stochastic went below 20. Right? We did not get a buy until 15, almost down 50% when that stochastic turned up and then the moving averages turned up. And we did play that buy signal. Fortunately, we got out because that was at 18 and we're now at 8. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
In other words, if the stochastic, the risk on the stochastics is that if the moving averages have said that the trend has turned down, it's just going to go down and get oversold. I don't think stocks are going to do that, Jeff. I would be very surprised if they did, but that's the risk, okay? And, you know, for most of our clients, that kind of risk is worth keeping a little cash out for. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Because that could happen. It would be extraordinarily doubtful.
Okay, two other really quickies, and then I'll turn it back. And I may come back to you for people who are listening to stay on the call. I got a couple other things, but I want to let people go and have comments.
Yeah.
My second to last quickie question for you is, so yesterday we got to within, I mean, it's just insane. We got to within 10 cents of the SPY low in October of 2014. That low was 180.92, and we hit 181.02 yesterday. I mean, call it uncanny or whatever, it just seems to me like, I'm kind of like, that sucks, because we had an opportunity to test that low and hold it, but we didn't do it, and that just makes me feel like we got to come back and test that number at some point in time. Is that crazy thinking, or is it, look, we got close enough and that's all that matters?
You know, that's a really interesting question, and one that I'm pondering as well. What I would say is, with the kind of momentum we've seen on the downside, the odds of a retest of the closing low, at least of the week, is high, okay? And probably somewhere down around 184, 183 is high, and that should take 5 to 10 weeks to materialize. Now, if that is the case and we do that, and we see the Russell doing much better and the transports doing much better for that 5 to 10 weeks, we're going to be in, you know, really good shape to call it complete end of this thing, okay? And it probably will take, you know, more than just a couple of days of outperformance to correct, excuse me, the problem in the Russell and the transports that took over a year to build.
So you said closing low. So what if we get to what if we can actually close tomorrow, like at 190? I mean, that would be...
Yeah, we'd have to go back to 188 or so.
Yeah.
But, the you know, to me, the risk is really that we go back down, you know, normally you go back down into the middle of whatever bar is the spike bar, okay? We did that after the August 2015 low. We got down a little bit more in that 189, 190 area. That's why I was trying to buy it at 190 back then, was we were halfway down the bar. So halfway down yesterday's bar is around 186.
Okay, so how here's my last thing, and I'll turn it back to questions. How tied are we to the price of oil? I mean, today oil, you know, gapped down, and now we're actually higher for the day. So I presume that – I haven't looked at the inventory stuff because we've been on the call – I presume that came in kind of okay, because if it was bad, we'd be down lower. So we're actually up 12 basis points now on the day. How tied are we to the price of oil in terms of equity indexes?
I think we're very tied. Again, Jeff, I'm concerned that the elephant in the room is deflation, Chinese problems, and all of that stuff tied to the price of oil, and the risk that the deflation in oil moves into the banking system through problems with you know, real estate in the oil patch, office space in Houston, and that sort of thing, and it spreads. I think that's what people are worried about. It's interesting that no one will say that, but I think that is the big, big risk.
Yep.
And, you know, so I think, you know, and again, remember, I saw in an article yesterday, it was really pretty funny, it says, well, the price of oil and the price of stocks aren't correlated at all most of the time. For some reason now, they are, right? No one wanted to say the reason is that oil's at 1980s levels, and if we have a deflationary crash, stocks will be at 1980s levels too, right?
Yep.
No one wants to say that at all. But, you know, there, and I don't think that's going to happen, but the risk is that we see those problems, you know, in the oil patch cause more trouble for the banking system and things that we're not seeing right now.
Okay, great. I'm going to open up for questions. I've gone more than long enough. Thanks.
Sure. Questions, anyone, hit star 6 to unmute yourself and we'll go.
Yeah, hey, Fred, it's Don.
Don, how are you?
Good. Well, sort of good. the weekly stochastics on the spider, The weekly iShares has really taken out the lows that we had in October of 14 and August of 15. So you've mentioned from time to time that that can be an indicator that, you know, we're going to take out those price lows.
I think that, Don, I think that that's very definitely the risk. And again, not for you necessarily, because I know what kind of advisor you are, but for the average asset allocating money manager using advisor that we have, that's why I'm not saying let's become fully invested here, is that the risk is we resolve this short-term oversold, which is very oversold, and then come back down here and do that.
Okay, but I mean, does it, can it suggest anything like, say, substantially lower lows, you know, like into a 160
absolutely.
Spider?
You know, I still think that 175 on the spider is doable, and we could see that before the end of this correction.
Okay.
So, you know, and again, Don, I think that's the risk, and, you know, who knows if it's going to happen, but I think that's the risk. And, you know, what I was telling someone yesterday was, yeah, it looks like we're having a nice reversal. You're investing for clients with a five-year time horizon. Does that mean you have to buy by the end of the day today? Right? You don't. Right? So
okay.
That's why we're holding some cash.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, this is Kip.
Kip, how are you?
Doing fine. Just a quick kind of a macroeconomic question for you, I guess. Perfect for a technician, huh?
Right.
With Europe being such an importer, net importer of oil, why have they taken more of a beating than we have? I mean, I hate to be captain obvious, but
I don't know the answer to that question, but you know, Kip, when you know, the other question is, if every stock in the transports, except for a couple of the railroads, benefits from lower oil prices, why aren't the transports going up? Right? Because we know that they're not. Okay.
Specifically airlines.
The only thing that I can say about that is there's something wrong with the way the price of oil is trading, and the fear is, again, the only fear I can see from a big drop in commodities is deflation and deflationary issues spreading to the rest of the economy. You know, I heard on, you know, the radio yesterday, and again, I listened to Atlanta radio, you might too, that there are whole towns in North Dakota that are now vacant that have been built for this oil boom because these oil companies are shutting down, closing up wells.
Yeah.
Right? There may be more problems coming here. Okay, I know from my experience in Texas, and if there are any Texan brokers on the call, oil hit a low in 86, 87. We were still stuck in Texas in 94. Things were just starting to pick up again. In other words, the problems can last longer even if oil prices turn around and go back up. Right?
Yeah. Well,
every bank went
bankrupt in Texas.
Yeah, every bank went bankrupt. That's why I'm short that Colin Frost. You know, that I have in the stocks that I dislike, that's gone from 80 down to 40. That's been a great trade. But it's a San Antonio bank that makes huge amounts of loans in the oil patch. They could be in more trouble, right?
Yeah.
In other words, there are still ramifications of this, and the fact that Europe isn't going up when they need the oil, to me, is a sign that there's something more wrong, and it may be wrong with the commodities and the deflationary outlook than anything else. You know, Kip, a really good question is, where is the growth going to come from that's going to make stock prices go up? That's a heck of a question. In Europe, they're trying to do it. In this country, we did QE to avoid deflation and stimulate employment and do all that. We stimulated employment, but we did not eliminate deflation, at least in the commodities.
Yeah. Speaking of commodities, you can tell if Jeff Garbaz is still on. The inventory report comes out at 11 today. It's a day late.
Okay.
FYI, so that's 10 minutes from now. So.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see. And, Kip, I will be getting up to Athens soon, and I will see you guys. Give my best to Bill and everyone.
Yeah, come see. You have a new office. Come see us.
Got it. Other questions?
Hey, Fred.
Hey, Fred, it's John.
John, real quick, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hope you're doing well. A couple quick questions. One, what kind of bounce levels are you seeing maybe on the SPY so that we could, you know, Peter and I know have been really kind of adding to managed futures here over the last couple of months, and it's really the only thing that's keeping us afloat. And kind of curious what you thought about that, what kind of allocation you would probably look at in managed
futures. I would love to see us get to at least 195. Failure to get to 195, which was the number we were using before, would be a real concern. Ideally, up to 198 to 200 would be where we would go, and then we would have to see.
Okay, perfect.
But what we have seen, and I think everyone's noticed this and has been very kind about not yelling at me for it, you know, we've had weaker rallies when we were supposed to rally that have gone less far and have resulted in bigger drops, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's a pattern that, you know, I would certainly like to see change before I get really, really excited. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But those are areas we should see.
And just to follow up on your comment about oil and how it's affecting, we had lunch the other day with a lady from Houston, and she's like, they are just absolutely sending trucks and dump trucks by the hundreds back from West Texas because there's just no use for them. So, I mean, somebody's going to be having banks going to be writing off losses on that, and so they're pumping oil because they got nothing else to do. So, because otherwise they're going out of business. They need some money coming in, but they can't sell it.
Yeah. In other words, and guys, I lived through this before. It takes longer even if the price goes back up. The other thing I would mention to people is, you know, turning up and turning down production in a place like Saudi Arabia is not a guy in Arab regalia with a light switch hitting the button and it changes. It's, you know, it's a long time, months, to get these wells producing and unproducing. You see what I'm saying? In other words, if the Arabs decide right now we're going to stop pumping the excess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't know when we're going to see that. That's a closely guarded secret of theirs, but you can figure it's going to take, you know, a month or so in any event before you even start to see the effects of that.
Right.
Now, the converse is, remember how we were talking about how we'd probably see a bottom in oil when Iranian production came online? And Iranian production is coming online, and so that may be the bottom, the fear that, oh, boy, when that production comes online, we're stuck, right? That may actually be the bottom. The real question is it going to turn around and go up?
Right. And as you pointed out, I think I don't think people are realizing, like I said, the price of oil in the energy companies, but it's also killing the down the line, like I say, the truck dealers, the banks, because of what they've lent out. You know, my brother-in-law works for Stanley Black & Decker, and he says his business has just been just destroyed over the last 6 months because of what's happened to oil.
Yeah. Yeah. And, again, one of the questions that you have to ask is how many of the relatively high-paying blue-collar jobs since 2009 have been created in the oil patch, and how many of those are we going to keep? I don't know the answer, but it's a question you have to ask.
Yep. Well, thanks, Fred. Appreciate it.
Got it. We'll see you guys soon. Yogesh, I think you were asking a question there in the background. Yogesh? Okay. Next question, if there is one. Very well. Going once. Going twice.
Hi, Fred. It's Justin.
Justin,
hey, Fred,
I figured you'd appear. Let Justin go
first. I'm doing good. Okay, just a couple of stocks for you. Anthem, Apple, Nancy, Tom, Mary.
You know, as long as it stays above 128, you've probably got a 128 to 144 range. It looks okay.
Great. Intuitive Surgical, Igloo, Sam, Roger, George.
Igloo, Sam, Roger, George. That is actually starting to give a weekly stochastic sell signal, so I'd be a little careful. Below 525, you could hit 475 on that.
Okay. And then you have a Tom, Elephant, Victor, Apple.
That is in a weekly stochastic sell mode, so you'll probably see a drop below the 60 of this week. I would love to buy that at 58 with a stop at 54 for you. And if it can go sideways in that weekly stochastic, get down to 50 and turn up, it's probably going to be okay. And by the way, guys, one of the things I failed to mention, IBB did have a nice reversal yesterday. Some of the good biotech stocks, we like Gilead. Celgene is highly rated at most of the firms. You can probably start to nibble at those now. We did upgrade healthcare to an equal weight in this month's sector review. While we're still concerned about biotech, yesterday was actually a very good day for biotech. That may actually, yeah, we may finally be seeing some of that carnage stop.
Yeah. And then in the call today, you'd mentioned something to the effect of in 8 to 10 weeks, you thought we might retest the SPY around 184. Did I hear that right?
That is correct.
So then is that after we test the SPY at 200?
That would be after.
Okay. Okay.
So we should rally and relieve. Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
You're expecting then the SPY to hit 210 or higher relatively soon in the next month or so, is that right?
198 to 200 should be in the next month if this is really still a bull market.
Okay. Okay, thanks for the clarity. And hey, great chart book this week also. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Hey, Fred, Rick Grimshaw.
Rick, how are you?
I'm well, man. Good to talk to you. So
it's
Scott Minard of Guggenheim.
Great to see you, by the way. Sorry,
Fun. Yeah. Scott Minard of Guggenheim was on a call this morning from Davos, and he has a 1650 target for the S&P. He thinks this is today and this week could be a little bit of a dead cat bounce. Thought that we could perhaps retest the highs that were made in 2011. Agree? Disagree?
You know, I think that is possible. I want to see how the internal indicators look. I can definitely see that, Rick, and that's why I'm telling people to keep carrying a cash position for most of the type of advisors that we have. But we should get a rally here unless things are really horribly weak. And what I'm really wanting to see here and thinking we should see is that the Russell and the transports and everything start to do much better relative to the S&P now. That would be the most bullish possible solution. But, you know, to answer the question that I think you're asking, which is, if you're a normal advisor and not a trading-oriented advisor, and you're 30% cash, which is most of our non-trading advisors are, I wouldn't chase this thing on the upside. We've got years to get in if this corrects, and there's no reason to chase it today. You see what I'm saying? If we do get down to that 1650 and the Russell is doing much better, that's going to be a really good buy, and that's certainly possible. What would tell me we were going to do that, by the way, is a close below 184 on the Spider, which is $3 away from here.
And Rick, follow up to that. How many days would you like to see the IWT or the IYT and the the two that you've mentioned, the
right,
Russell and
the
training?
How many days would you
like to see them act well before you're more convinced this is broadening out perhaps to the upside?
The general rule is if one quarter of the time that it was weak, which means on a year basis, if it's been weak for a year, we would like to see continued improvement in that for 2 to 3 months. Okay. Normally with a decline of this kind from a technical perspective, Rick, you don't make a V bottom. You have some kind of a retest like we did in 2011, for example. Okay? And I would give that, obviously, and let's say I give that an 80% probability. Well, obviously, that means 20% of the time it doesn't do that. But for most of our advisors, we're in 70% of our money. So if it doesn't retest and we're in 70% and it goes up and we're making money, you know, I would much rather have that problem than we're fully invested and it's at 1600 and now what the heck do we do, right? That, at least that's how I'm looking at it, and I think how a lot of the people I spoke to on yesterday are looking at it. You know, and again, with the caveat being that nothing would make me happier than to see this end. It's bad for everybody's business, including mine. But the risk is that we bounce around like this into the end of the first half, and the second half of the year is much better. That would be, and if we see that with the Russell and the transports getting better and some of the smaller cap stuff doing much better, you know, we've got a recipe then for a 2 or 3 year advance, and that's sort of what I'm hoping for.
Great. Thanks, Fred.
Sure. Other questions? Jeff, did you have one more thing for me, or shall we abdicate? Very well. Going once, going twice. This will end the Fred Report technical market call for January 21st, 2016.